One thing I love about design is that it has actually changed a lot of things about me as a person.
Yeah.
So forget about the professional side. How I process things, how I interact with people, how I process problems and structure them. And I feel like there are problems within Africa that can only be sorted if people have a designer's mindset. So I'm looking at two things, either one becoming a designer or just one understanding that this design process that helps your mind kind of become a beginner's mind, like a kid's mind. A kid doesn't really care whether it's black or red.
Yeah.
Because they're in discovery all the time. So we all have a lot of biases that have been created by either the system, which is the academic system, or the environment we live in, social norms, cultures, and stuff like that. And this is one thing that moved me again deeper into behavioral design. And I thought, if people were aware of these things called biases, then people would actually do things differently.
Hello, my name is Masha Tisa, and you're listening to the Creative Bulb Podcast, a podcast that helps you get to your full creative potential. I'm on a journey, I'm just here to learn. And the beauty about this podcast, it has made me meet a lot of people. I kid you not, I don't know, you can just go check out all the episodes that we've had. I get to meet a lot of people. And every single time I'm doing a recording, I'm always learning. So it's always my desire for you as well, that when you listen to this podcast, you get to learn something. So today we are learning about the design ecosystem, for sure, that I am not familiar with. And our guest today is called Munyala Mwalo. This podcast has been made available by Midundo Online, that is your home for East African conscious music. It's an online radio station that all of you guys should be listening to. So I'd like to request you to follow Midundo Online on social media. And also follow the podcast on social media as well. Without wasting much time, I'd like to welcome you all to the podcast, and I hope you get to enjoy.
Today, I have a very interesting guest with me because he's doing things I've always like never really understood. Because the last time I checked, we only knew of interior designers and graphic designers. Now we have things like behavior. I'm like, okay, what on earth is happening here? So our guest today is called Munyala Mwalo. So he's going to be talking to us what he does. He's the founder of Space AI. Is it Space AI? A design mentor, a service and behavior designer. Welcome so much, Munyala, to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you so much. You pronounced my name right.
How do people say your name?
Munyalo, Mwanyalo. But it's interesting because it comes from, it kind of makes me a different tribe every time someone pronounces it.
Okay. That's nice. Yeah. So I've just talked briefly about what you do, but like, how do you describe yourself? If someone was to ask you who's Munyala, what would you say?
I think that's the most difficult question in the world. First of all, I'm a poet. I'm a creative. That's Munyala now. And then there's Munyala for the world. Munyala for the world is I'm a service and behavioral designer, which is kind of two professions. I see them as one, but then I use that title to help people just process and understand what I really do. But if I were to summarize what I do in one sentence, is that I'm an ethical manipulator.
Okay? Ethical manipulator, okay.
I manipulate systems and processes and how people do things, but in an ethical way.
Okay.
So, yeah, through research, understanding people and situations and processes, and then curating better ways of doing them. That's what a designer does.
Okay. So thank you so much for, I love the way you've introduced yourself. It's actually synchronized, and the way you're calling yourself an ethical manipulator that you're going to learn a lot about. And so you said also there's something you mentioned about service and behavior design. And I also mentioned, because the last time we checked, people were interior designers, fashion designers. Now, all of a sudden, I think ever since 2017, since I started noticing guys are calling themselves, I don't know what designer. You're like, honey, what did these people study? How do you become a behavior designer? So would you tell us, maybe, like, for example, service and behavior design, are these things that just came up the other day? Have they always been existent? And then what are these design disciplines that have just come up?
Yeah, so first of all, it's not a new concept. It's, I think, service design. The most basic that people understand is design thinking as a foundational element of design. And that has been there for the last, I don't know, 30 years, 40 years, if I'm not wrong. I think Apple was using design thinking early 90s, late 80s. But then its presence into Africa has not been that loud for a while. It was introduced through social impact space. And then now it's morphing into the corporate space. The basic or the common word here is design. So designers curate. The work of a designer is to actually curate. So the difference comes with what you're actually curating. So an artist will actually, a visual designer will curate visual elements. And there are different categories of visual designers. There's a visual designer, there's a UI designer who curates software elements or product elements. And then we have an interior designer who curates house interiors and stuff like that. We have an architect who's also a designer who kind of curates structured systems. And then now comes our side of design. So what's common in our space of design in Africa is user experience design. That's what a lot of people have had, because that is in the software space. So user experience designer mostly focus a lot on software products. So they curate how software products are actually working and how they operate. And then comes us, who are introducing other terminology. So within the ecosystem of design, you'll actually meet a lot of people with different terminologies, from a communications designer, service designer, behavioral designer. There are very many. I don't think I can even talk about most of them. But like I said, the foundation of all this is design thinking, which is a framework of, so there's design thinking and there's human-centered design, which is usually sometimes interchanged as a word, but one is a principle and a philosophy. So human-centered design is a philosophy where it's a principle of doing things with a user at the center of everything.
Yeah.
And then there's the framework that is actually being used, which is design thinking. So design thinking is more or less of a framework or a process that people use to make sure that the user is at the center of every activity. So it has different steps of going, which start with the research. If I was to just split them into maybe three, there's a process of research, which is understanding processes, people, and systems. And then now you move into the design process, which is co-creative. So you design with the users themselves. And then now the outcome testing. So you test what you've actually created throughout that process. But you'll get different ways of people defining how many steps there are. There are 5 steps, there are 7 steps.
Yeah.
The principle remains the same. You have the user, the center, and then you have the whole ecosystem that you try to understand and make sure whatever you are designing or creating for this person kind of fits into the ecosystem that they live in.
Yeah.
So design is that process of just understanding and creating. Depending on what title you're giving yourself, it's just understanding and creating. For MySpace, 2 categories, service design that you just asked. So service design is about experiences and processes within organizations or within any space that there's any engagement. So in a service designer kind of tries to understand how best an organization can actually operate. From, I don't know, if I was to give a simple example, in a petrol station, how will the vehicles come in and how are they going to be, who is going to attend to them and what are they going to interact with as they are attending to them? So all these interfaces that you're interacting with, the work of a designer to curate them in a way that the service can be fast and efficient. So the entry, where should the entry be placed? First of all, where should the petrol station be placed? On the right side or the left side of the road? And then the entry, where should it be placed? How many entries do you actually need according to the traffic that you expect? How long does it take for someone to actually get fuel or gas? How do they pay? Through which interface? Once they pay, so what happens first before the other activity? And what are the support services behind that?
Yeah.
You go to a hospital, what are all these things involved by the time you're getting into the hospital to the time you're getting out, to just make sure that there's efficiency in how this service is actually being provided?
Yeah.
So it can be in the corporate space, it can be in the social impact space, but that is the work of a service designer, is to curate how processes and services are actually provided and all the support ecosystems around it to make sure that it's actually efficient and actually functional also.
Yeah.
And there's a business element of it, of course. You can't use a rocket to take people to from Nairobi to Mombasa.
Yeah.
You have to use something that is feasible.
Yeah.
So all those things involved. So I'll say that is service design, which forms the majority of the work that I do.
Yeah.
Behavioral design comes in a little bit later in my career. And behavioral design was influenced by my work in the social impact space. Yes, when you talk to people and try to do research, it's not easy to actually get to understand what they're trying to say. Now, remember, not everyone knows what their needs are. Even you, someone was to ask you, what's your favorite color? There's that assumption that you have, your favorite color is versus what you actually buy. So if you look at your closet, you realize it's black, 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 and your favorite color is actually red. and you wonder, why don't you choose your favorite color when you get there?
Yeah.
So behavioral science kind of facilitates those processes of getting into understanding why people behave the way they behave, their biases and the differences in their biases, and how those biases influence their actions and decision making.
Yeah.
So, and that is a fundamental kind of space of a designer. For you to make sure that you design well, you need to clearly understand why people behave the way they behave. So it's a combination of a science and creative work to just understand that. So it's a little bit more detailed. You still do that in service design, but then in behavioral design, we're very intentional in getting to understand these behaviors and biases and designing experiments to actually create solutions.
But I'm almost getting a picture of what exactly you mean. So my question is, what in your experience informed you to call yourself a service or behavior designer? Like, did you go through a training? Because, you know, I can't even call myself a behavior designer. What qualifies someone as a behavior designer or a service designer? And then maybe you can also talk about, since you said it's a new thing, I'm assuming service design existed before, but we just didn't know we were doing that. What was that role that was, because now you're saying service designer, now it makes sense. What was that role? What was the name of that title? And then also you take us through now your experience, how you started and how you now finally settled that you're doing service and behavior design.
So knowing the role that was, that's a little bit difficult. But if I was to look at just generally or maybe professionally, what people call themselves, there are two categories of people that kind of, if combined, could fit the basic criteria of what service design does. Traditionally, we had people, and this is my own presumption.
Yeah.
Traditionally, we had people who are doing marketing, so the marketers, whose job is to, again, understand how they're going to get into the minds of people and influence them to do something. And then we also had researchers whose job were, again, to understand people. So in marketing, the work comes after the product has actually been designed. So you understand, you have a product and now you want to sell it out.
Yeah.
In design, it is the opposite. It starts before you actually go to the market. So you understand people first before you design the product.
Oh, okay.
But guys who have been doing business strategy have a little bit kind of been doing design. But service design has been there for longer. I don't think it's only that I think in Africa, we didn't really embrace it quite much a lot, but it has been there for a while. But traditionally, most people would actually use the word user experience designer or a product designer or a product manager. So those are guys who been actually taking these functions of service design in different capacities. So the industry keeps on redefining the role and the name of the role. If you go to Microsoft and if you go to a company like IDEO, you'll get different names. They also are pretty much close to each other, but they have different terminology. So it doesn't really matter what it does, as long as your job is to curate these processes based on certain learnings. So first of all, there's no, at least that I know of right now, there has not been an institution that has been training in design in Africa. I've just come to learn of late of an institution that was established in South Africa. Stanford B-School just recently. In Kenya, for a while before, there was a Nairobi Design Institute that was training people on human-centered design. And then they stopped. So there's no formal education when it comes to design. So I would say majority, if not 90% or more, of Kenyan designers are actually self-taught. So first you get into discovery while you're working, and then now you move into learning online through different platforms and then understanding. And it always starts with a simple, specific activity. So when you learn about design thinking as the basic of the design process. The common one has been, I think there's a course offered by Acumen and IDEO. A lot of people have been doing that course and then they discover, oh, wow, so I have been doing these processes and now I have a framework of how to actually do it. And then now they start getting into user experience design in the software world, and then there are guys in the social impact space, human centered design. It's a very big field, but a very silent one.
Yeah, I hear you. Very big, very silent. That sort of comes in as an opportunity, maybe like starting a school to train people on design. You mentioned when you're launching the journey to launch Space AI, it's been a while you are crafting something and now finally you are able to now launch it. So would you take us through what exactly is this journey and then what is Space AI about?
So I would say the Space AI journey is my journey through design. Okay, let me just take you a little bit back. What I studied is completely different, out of this world. I started my career. So I did ecotourism and hospitality management. I don't know how I ended up there. It's a long story. And then I moved into a master in environmental science. Mm-hmm. Again, how I made that decision was based on my BSc. But then my first job was in research in Egerton University. So in research and innovation. So I was put in charge of research and innovations as an associate.
Yeah.
And I learned a lot about research, and especially in agriculture. So I did not do a lot of work in the tourism space. So I did a lot of work in research in agriculture with Egerton, and then got into agritech. So we established the Seeds of Gold magazine, which is a nation media farmers magazine.
Yeah.
And through that, I started interacting with farmers. For the first 1 year, I think my phone number was the contact magazine. So you can imagine every Saturday I used to get calls, like 100, 200 of them from farmers. But it made me curious to try and understand, why is it that there are a lot of solutions out there about agriculture, but still farmers have these questions that they're trying to ask. So it made me curious to try and understand, how can I curate solutions and ideas? And since I was also in the innovation space, in my head, in my mind, I was also an innovator. So my job was to just come up with ideas. And I was very good in coming up with shiny ideas, brilliant stuff that could actually make guys excited and stuff. Some could work, some could not work.
Yeah.
But then it just took me through a journey of about 3 years in agritech from Egerton University. Did some work with Digifarm Safaricom at some point. And then I moved into trade marketing and sales, again with Safaricom, and a little bit of EABL through an agency. So all this time, I'm actually interacting with people and trying to create solutions for problems. Mm-hmm. And I call myself an innovator. So for the past 3-4 years of my career, I was this innovations guy. Anyone who had an issue called me, Munyala, I want to do this. How do I structure it? And I was very good at structuring and organizing all that. But then I moved into, so agriculture was agriculture and brand end of sales was a very big part of my work.
Yeah.
And research and innovations. And then I discovered through a book called Creative Confidence, I discovered design thinking as a framework, because I realized sometimes it's very hard to explain to people how you came up with that idea.
Yeah.
So then is this framework that you can actually put around it, which is called design thinking. So I learned. So I subscribed to an online course in design thinking. And that was the beginning of my life in the design space. So design thinking moved me into user experience design, which I was working for a fintech company to just design fintech solutions. And again, just in the space of trying to discover and understand why processes and systems are not working.
Yeah.
And then I moved into social impact. So from UX, I moved directly into humanitarian work and development sector.
Yeah.
So now we are designing solutions for problems like poverty, things that you can't necessarily solve in one day.
Yeah.
So health, poverty, all these things. And that is where a lot of designers call themselves human-centered designers and stuff like that. And that's where also for me, I got deeper into behavioral design as a support system to the things that I'm actually doing in the design space. But then the learnings that I actually picked from all that is one segment of people that I realized was always being left out.
Yeah.
And these are people who, and ideally not just a segment, I think Africa in general has always been about 5 or 10 years behind a certain technology that comes.
Yeah.
And now we are moving and segueing into Web3. And people have not even completely understood Web2.
Yeah.
So what is this Web3 thing that is coming? And do people have the capacity and the capability of actually getting into it? So through some of the work that we have done, experience and research, with my partner, we sat down one day and realized, actually it was out of some research work we were doing and we were having a sprint. We realized if you can design simple ways that people can interact with complex systems, then we stand to win. And we came up with a principle called advanced simplicity. So everything that we do, everything that I want to do from the year 20, and that was end of last year, coming to this year, kind of bringing the principle of advanced simplicity. And for us, advanced simplicity was that if we can make it so simple for the person using it, that they don't know the shenanigans going on in the back end, then any person can use any technology, be it bitcoins, cryptocurrency, blockchain, it doesn't really matter what it is. And that was the birth of Space. And before Space, there's another institute we established for design to train designers and to come up with to do consulting work in design and all that. So the Institute of Design and Innovation was the one that was actually doing all this work in the design space. And we thought, okay, let's bring in an idea that can help us, one, facilitate processes, people processes for people in the field, for people who are not necessarily... So remember, I was in agriculture. I was in trade and sales.
Yeah.
So dealing with people who are always in the field doing something, and researchers and all that. And we thought, okay, so first of all, there's a lot of data that is actually collected. That's number one. But then all these people, we can categorize as offline kind of gig economy. So we all know about the gig economy.
Yeah.
But then there's an offline gig economy. So the gig economy that we know is like 10% of the total. Majority of Kenyan workers are actually in the offline space. So you're doing a job and you're earning on a daily basis. You're doing a job and you... So the only digital way of payment is actually M-Pesa. But the rest of the activities within that job is not really documented and all that. So talk of farmers, talk of salespeople, talk of, I don't know, caretakers just at home doing their own shenanigans and all that. So we thought, how can we... Because these people are value creators. They're actually value creators. Mm. When it comes to last mile service delivery, they're just the ones who do all these things. So imagine you're a caretaker. If you get into a new apartment, the first person will always ask for certain things is the caretaker.
Yeah.
And they always have answers. These guys have been there for like 10 years, 15 years, 20 years.
Yeah.
You know, every corner, every kind of service and all that. We have this engagement with caretakers, and we realize that every time you get into an apartment and you want internet, for instance, these guys are going to be the ones to give it to you. They're going to tell you, okay, just call this guy, or they're going to call someone. And then one day we're having a conversation with one of them, and he's telling us, yeah, you know, you don't know how many people have actually helped to get internet in this apartment, but they don't even get me anything, like you, as in hakuna chai or something. I was like, okay. So we track back to the work that we were doing in the space, and we realized that all these agents that we employ actually get a commission for every sale that is made.
Mm.
And this sale is actually made, in reality, is actually made by this guy, this caretaker guy. But the caretaker doesn't get anything.
Mm.
So then why don't we create a platform that can give this caretaker the power to be able to make that sale directly and get that commission also on their own? Okay.
Yeah.
So you have these agents on the ground, we call them agents on the ground, who can be able to access or give a service or make a sale for a service and earn something out of it, no matter how small it is. It can be 2%, 5%, or something of that sort. So space was built to do that at a very basic scenario. So to decentralize this process of actually accessing service to anyone who can create an ecosystem of their own and be able to actually sell. So a caretaker can actually decide that this house is actually my house.
Yeah.
So I can be able to be giving services and use this platform, which is non-intrusive. It's actually conversational. Use this platform to sell. So if Marcia wants internet, so I can just send Marcia wants internet. This is the plot number. This is the location.
Yeah.
This is the number of rooms she has. And we do the fulfillment of that service at the back end. We do all the dirty work.
Mm.
And then once the fulfillment has actually been done, now this guy gets the commission that he actually deserves. So the only way he's going to be interacting with the system is through a conversational platform. But everything else complicated is done at the back end. So we have service APIs and other things to support the service at the back end. So even farmers, you have salespeople and agents dealing with farmers, and we help them to just be able to create their own community on both farmers, and then help them with the services and get a commission from that. So that is the economic bit of it.
Yeah.
The foundation of space is purely design-led. Because once you have all these digital agents on the ground, then we can actually run behavioral experiments through the activities that they actually have and be able to design even better solutions for them.
Yeah.
We want to take design to the next level where over and above me having to go to the field and just do research and understand people and come up with solutions, that is often guided by industries. So a company would come to me and tell me, Munyala, okay, we need your services to do research and design for a certain product.
Yeah.
We want to start doing it the other way around. We understand that these people have certain problems. We curate and craft them, create solutions for them, and then let it come and support that space. So that's, and by coincidence, it's just called space.
Yeah. So like, how do people get to interact with a space platform? Is it an app you're downloading? Is it, I don't know,
nope.
It's a USSD? What is it?
WhatsApp.
Oh, what? Oh, okay. Oh, that's easy.
All these so actually happen on conversational platforms. It's WhatsApp.
Oh,
yeah. So any conversational platform actually works. WhatsApp, Telegram. Right now we are doing WhatsApp because the majority of the people are actually using WhatsApp.
Yeah.
But it can work on Telegram. So there's no app that is actually being built to do all this. So first of all, we are starting with closed ecosystems. Say for instance, an organization that has sales agents on the ground. So we use that as an entry point. So we have several levels for it. There's a very complex level, like for farmers, because for a farmer, farmers onboard their own suppliers and create a whole. Have the simplest where you just want to purchase something, you just do it on WhatsApp, which is not really our focus because that is not what you're built for. What you're built for is to create a product that these people who are not the offline guys, offline economy, can actually use a platform to create their own businesses, processes.
Yeah.
But then in the back end, support them with things, technologies like AI, blockchain, machine learning, natural language processing to just understand what they're trying to say and stuff like that.
Okay. Okay, I hear
so,
you.
Yeah, so a lot of things operating in stealth mode.
Okay. That's a really good way to look at it. And I like the way your thoughts are well organized, you know, like how you start from your experience informed this. And I think it must be because of your understanding as well for design thinking, because it kind of makes you learn how to map, put your ideas together in a way things will come up. You mentioned about you had the Institute of Design and Innovation, and you also as part of your CV, you're a design mentor. So you used to train guys. When do these trainings happen? Do you take cohorts? How long are the trainings? How can someone be a part of that?
So there are several ways, actually. So the establishment of the Institute for Design and Innovation was out of need.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? First of all, there are no institutions. There are no institutions actually training young people that design actually exists. It's a very good career, to be sincere. It's a really good career. And sometimes you even don't need a degree to be a designer, in my own opinion. You just need to be a creative thinker. You need to find a way and a process of how to think and process things without biases. But how will people discover that this actually exists?
Yeah.
So there were several things that we thought of when we started the Institute for Design and Innovation. So first of all, in campuses and colleges, we're introducing design institutes in campuses. We are working right now with Egerton University to set up one.
Mm-hmm.
Probably we'll have another one in USIU and then another one in Moi University, hopefully.
Yeah.
Moi is a long story. But then within the institutions, we craft this learn by doing kind of activities. So we first of all onboard people actually fit the bill and then train them on the basics of design and then actually do a project with them so that they can actually learn what design is.
Okay.
Then secondly, currently we are doing a design accelerator together with another design firm called Medeva.
Mm-hmm.
So we recruited about 8 designers for a project of about, it's going to be a learning process of about 3 to 6 months. So we introduced them again to the process of design. So it's a series of both classwork where they learn about the basics of design and practical work. So all the projects that we are actually doing, we post those guys in those projects so that they can actually experience how the whole process of design end to end actually works. And in different scenarios, both in technology, in the social impact space, and in the corporate space.
Okay.
So that is ongoing. Actually, we did recruitment about 2 months ago.
Yeah.
So they are actually in their second month right now, ongoing. And then we also do mentorship. So first I joined the ADP list.
The what, sorry?
Using ADP list. So ADP list is an interesting idea that was created by a guy called Felix and another guy from Ghana that designers can actually offer free support and mentorship to other designers across the world. And for one reason, to learn about design, the best way to learn about design is by teaching design. And then secondly, also to be able to just give back all the things that I've actually learned in all these years to the people who are getting into the world of design.
Yeah.
And then thirdly, also, a lot of the things that we are doing and the career world requires more designers.
Yeah.
But then where do we start from? Where do you start?
Yeah.
For us, like for me, I discovered it about 4 years after campus. Yeah.
Mm.
So what if someone discovered it while they're still in campus? So those are the processes and spaces that we're creating that people can actually learn, understand, and experience design as they go. So we also do trainings across, there's a project we're doing with USAID right now that is design-led. That is targeting to reach out to about 300,000 youth in 5 years. So there are projects that are ongoing to also support designers out of school. And also there are companies and organizations that just reach out for design training. So train my staff, help my staff get to that level. And we do it in a very practical way. So that is the work that Institute of Design and Innovation is actually doing.
Mm.
So it's a designers collective.
Yeah.
So we slowly recruit, train and recruit on our platform, and then give opportunities and access. So when they are in this ecosystem, it's easy for them to get opportunities. But if you're not, like, trust me, there are a lot of people who don't even know the word design exists in a different context about
them. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what we're trying to create.
That's a really good thing you're mentioning in terms of capacity building, because most people don't know. You know, we're used to the standard design, but now this is another whole new world. If you're not in that ecosystem, you'll never know any opportunity. So you can actually miss out on all that. That's a really good way. So I want us to go now and discuss other things as well, because you also mentioned you're a poet and a creative. So we're talking about the Institute of Design and Innovation and the variety of projects you're doing in terms of mentorship. So it's in various universities. I think ideally what you're saying is if you're able to contact IDI, you can always direct people on the right way to go. I feel like that's the contact point, direct everyone on where to go. So when it comes to training, because I've heard you say you're training people like after campus, maybe. Is it also possible to teach children design thinking? Is that something that, I don't know?
Yeah, it's very funny you're asking, because one thing I love about design is that it has actually changed a lot of things about me as a person.
Yeah.
So forget about the professional side. How I process things, how I interact with people, how I process problems and structure them. And I feel like there are problems within Africa that can only be sorted if people have a designer's mindset.
Mm.
So I'm looking at two things, either one becoming a designer or just one understanding that there's this design process that helps your mind kind of become a beginner's mind. It's like a kid's mind.
Mm-hmm.
A kid doesn't really care whether it's black or red.
Yeah.
Because they're in discovery all the time. So we all have a lot of biases that have been created by either the system, which is the academic system, or the environment we live in, social norms, cultures, and stuff like that. And this is one thing that moved me again deeper into behavioral design. And I thought, if people were aware of these things called biases, then people would actually do things differently.
Mm.
And the potential of that is through looking at children and younger people. And that's why we are targeting campuses.
Mm.
The second step, we're actually having discussions with the Directorate of Technical and Vocational Training Education to pilot a curriculum in TVETs in the National Polytechnics for design thinking.
Mm.
Now, over a period of time, we've been learning design from what design has been defined by the Western nations based on their own context. So we have slowly have seen designers in Kenya and Africa redefining what design is to Africa, just exactly to our context.
Yeah.
Now transferring that to the children and the education system is going to be the next big thing for now. For children, it's actually the best way to do it.
Yeah.
Teach them how to think, problems and process and create solutions. And that way you have a new generation that thinks differently. And you only need, if you become a designer, you become a very strong influencer. That's one thing I realized. In every conversation, you kind of have a neutral or a balanced way of dealing with people.
Yeah.
And people take you as, somehow you look like the most brilliant guy in the room.
Yeah.
But also it's because you're a very good listener.
Mm.
So the moment you become a very good listener, everyone will actually want to do things your way.
Yeah.
Naturally. Mm. So imagine having one person who understands the whole process of design, thinks differently in the midst of 100 people.
Yeah.
The ripple effect is going to be very high.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to transfer that to kids eventually. So what I want is, the reason we're also building spaces that we get the money to go to the field and just teach
them. Yeah.
Like you are giving it for free. Design is very expensive to train. But I want us to get to a point where Institute of Design is just an institute. It's empowering people, talking to people, helping kids learn the basics of design at a very early stage.
Yeah.
By the time they get into secondary school, high school, then they have a very different way of dealing with things.
Mm.
So you can imagine what that will do to Africa in the coming years. I did mention I'm a poet. And one thing I love about poetry and art is that, so when I was young, my mom used to have a school, community school, primary school in Madare.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom used to love art and poetry. So she still does love art and poetry. The school is not there anymore. But we used to train kids poetry, music, musicals, plays, and stuff like that. And through that, through those conversations and those, because they keep on talking about the same thing over and over again, you could see how the kids were different from the rest in how they think, in how they process things and all that. So through such avenues, then it's easy to just change how kids think and change how the next generation processes things. And I think that's the legacy we want to leave everyone.
Yeah, and there's something you've actually mentioned. Everybody needs to be taught design thinking. It means that even the vision you have for IDI just even goes beyond you. I'm always very interested in children because ideally I always call myself, I like designing for kids for some reason. I don't know, for some reason. And I also did like a sprint with NDI. I think that's when I was able to understand things about design thinking, other likes. And it's true what you said, it makes you a bit different from other people because you're always thinking of solutions. Not everyone will be going to look for jobs. You'll be like, I see a problem. I'm trying to solve a problem for this. So you create opportunities around that. So it means everyone needs to learn about design thinking. And I like what you said about you want to take it to the TVET institutions. Ah, that will be a game changer. And even kids, if they're able to learn, oh my goodness. Now capacity, like for us to achieve this dream in Africa, goodness. Of course, the people you're going to train are the ones who are going to catch the vision and keep on spreading the word. But so far, you've done something you've done something. Would you talk about the impact so far, like a personal, any personal stories you've seen in Yewe? We have created an impact. What has the impact been so far from your work?
I think it's twofold. It's very conflicting.
Seriously
conflicting. And this is an outcome of, let me say, my previous work, my current project. So there's a project I'm just closing right now, and I think I've been posting all over LinkedIn and guys reaching out to get my perspective on things. It's very funny that design, most of the spaces that we deal with are spaces which have, we call wicked problems. Wicked problems are basically complicated problems. They don't have one single solution. They are things like poverty. Before you solve poverty, there are 1,000 other things that are related to that space that you may not be able to touch at once. But then design still helps. It helps people discover that there's a problem here and this is how it's actually being done. And I have seen the work that design has done. There's I used to work for ThinkPlus, and I've seen an award they won recently of a project that was being done last year for ANC, antenatal care, some things in the public health space. So there's a lot of work that has gone, especially in health, in poverty alleviation, in economic development. You can actually see the lives of people being transformed from one to the other. You can actually see development organizations doing their thing better, having more outputs and better outcomes than they used to have. Because right now you understand exactly what do you need to prioritize as a solution for a community. And even talking to these communities and seeing the outcome of these projects and just engaging with them, you can actually hear them say, by the way, I did not see it that way. Now I see it differently. Now, there's always one problem in design that is, I think companies and organizations are trying to get into the space of how do you measure the impact of design? Sometimes it's very long term, so much long term. That you can't say, okay, we did this yesterday and this is the output today. So it takes time before that is actually processed. And people have just started publishing the work that is being done in the design space. The conflict is brought by the fact that whoever is instructing or requesting for you to do design work has certain objectives and ambitions. And their agenda could be very different from the success agenda that you have in mind as a designer. Because remember, our work is very facilitative. We don't create, we don't innovate. We facilitate that process to actually happen. So if a client comes to me and tells me there's this problem I want you to solve, and then in my process of discovery, I actually discover that, okay, this is how we expected and anticipated to solve it, but we're getting this and this different scenarios that we also need to deal with. But then if it is not within your scope, according to what the client wants, then that means you will only solve what is within your scope and then start asking questions. So who's responsible for what you are supposed to actually solve? Because design tells you you need to do A and B before you get to C. So then those conflicts actually exist. And that's why I was mentioning earlier that it needs to get to a point where now the problems are actually advised by the community. Where the community, because you study and understand them, you can actually start seeing opportunities for creating impact within that. Now, so sometimes you create a solution and then it creates a new problem. So I'll give you an example. And this is a very controversial topic that people don't really want to discuss. So
yeah,
things like, let me say, the development agenda for the last 20, 30 years has been focusing a lot on women.
Okay? Yeah.
It's a very good thing. So women empowerment, gender equity, and all these things. Last year, when I was interacting with communities in the semi-arid and arid areas, one of the biggest problems and complaints for organization was that there's gender violence. Okay? Which is true. There's a lot of gender violence. But then I start asking myself, but where did it come from?
Yeah.
Do you want to tell me that traditionally these communities have always been having gender violence in their families and stuff like that? And so every time you interrogate, you realize that the picture that is drawn before the age of equity and stuff like that is very different from the picture right now. So it means people evolved into becoming gender violent in a way based on certain things that were done to them.
Okay. Yeah.
So based on certain design practices that introduced, let's say, let's educate women in this community, men were actually isolated.
Yeah.
Okay. So you solved one problem and then you create another problem where now you have men who have no power, but women have more power.
Mm.
Okay. So things like gender violence and stuff like that will still come in because there's ego and all these things.
Yeah.
So how do you balance all this? We call it impact in the design space to make sure that one solution is not trying to create another problem.
Yeah.
That you constantly become an NGO. We don't want designers to become NGOs.
Yeah.
To create the next problem so that business can still be there.
Yeah.
So I'm doing a project right now. We are designing a game for climate change.
Yeah.
Okay? So the objective is to try and use this game to change people's behaviors around their social norms and the things that they do that have a negative impact to the environment, and also to just learn about what they are, and most importantly, to be able to come up with interventions that are very functional for themselves, but through gamification. And I think what I liked about that game is that when we were doing the testing, once people have realized that there was this conversation around, so the game is designed in a way, let me just give a very high level glimpse. So the game is designed for the Maasai community in a way that they play as households. Okay. Mm-hmm. And what we did in the research is that we discovered, we identified key things that they believe in. So things that drive their decision making processes. And you'd find that for men, the cows are very important because that is their source of wealth. For women, the milk is very important because that is their source of food.
Yeah.
So you get the different motivations in decision making across different facets of the community.
Yeah.
And then you bring all these things into a game. And then put them in a situation where they have to choose between a practice that they love so much but has a negative impact on the ecosystem versus a practice that they don't really know so much about but has a positive impact on the ecosystem.
Yeah.
And you can see how rigid they are when the game actually starts. And they're like, no, me, I can't lose a cow. I can't lose this and this. But by the time the game is actually going to end, you start realizing they're flexible enough to say, oh, maybe let me just lose one cow. And then I can get it later on if the environment is okay and stuff like that. And you can see the changes in how they think and process and how they start detaching. When now social norms stop becoming very emotional attachments, it gets to a point where the community now says, okay, by the way, we can actually sell 10 cows and remain with two so that we have money in the bank, which are things that the government has been struggling with for a very long time.
Yeah.
Now I can actually see the work of design in helping them process that slowly instead of telling them, you guys, you need to sell your cows. They can't sell. It has to be an intrinsic decision over time to just nudge them slowly by slowly to change how you're thinking and then process things differently and then change how the community operates. And we start from the household and family level to the community level. And I think that is a clear indication of the impact of design. It enables people to start seeing things that they are not usually seeing and start doing them differently. But with a balance, like I said, conflict will always be there. You change how people are doing things and then they start doing another bad thing.
Yeah. I can imagine. I can imagine how it feels to be a designer. In a way, you're like superheroes. You know, you're changing things. You know how you feel like when you're changing, you're like part of, you're creating an impact. Something that you've created has changed something in people. But I'm also just wondering, because, you know, at the end of it all, we are all human beings. Ideally, because you also mentioned your creatives, what are these common challenges that people in the design field are likely to face? Like, do you have any challenges? Or the ideas just come in? What are some of the common challenges you guys are facing? Maybe creatively, I don't know.
I think two or three. Let me say two. One, for you to be a good designer, you need to be able to manage your biases. I think that's the most difficult work for any human being, not even just a designer.
Yeah,
there are things that we've intrinsically or learned over time that is very, very hard to actually detach. So when I'm actually doing research and I'm having a conversation with you and I want to learn something, sometimes there's this tendency of trying to make a conclusion based on what I believe. Because this person is actually black, I am 100% sure they come from Sudan. Because this person is light skin, they come from Ukambani, which are biased. So they are very, and you see, the problem is that they're like 100 or 1,000. I think they are more than 100 biases.
Yeah.
In this world. So how do you actually become aware of them? That is the most difficult work. To be a good designer, you need to know how to manage your biases. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you use process, and sometimes it has to be very intrinsic and very intentional.
Mm.
So you need to just appreciate that. First of all, I'm a human being and I have biases.
Yeah.
So every time I try to impose it on people, I check back on myself and say, okay, your job is facilitation, not advising. That's one.
Oh, that's hard.
So we are not creators.
Yeah.
Yes, we call ourselves creatives, but it's not our job to come up with these solutions.
Yeah.
It's our job to facilitate people to get to that solution. So that it's owned. Yeah, that. So first of all, we help people frame a problem by asking questions and using our own processes. Is the right problem to actually solve? Then once they answer that question, then what could be the possible solutions to this? And you help them to narrow down until even the testing process is part of the facilitation. But just make sure that whatever you're designing for just helps you, and the client helps you come up with that solution within that process. So that is the detachment that has to happen. If you're attached to your biases, you become a creator, you become an innovator, which is very different from a designer.
Oh, okay.
And that's also the difference between our design and the other design.
Oh,
because
okay.
The other design,
creators.
Listen, and then exactly. The second thing, I think the biggest challenge, which has also been, which we're trying so hard in this industry to try and solve, is that the design world is still run by international companies.
Mm-mm.
Okay, they have agendas. They sit down in somewhere in London and come up with an idea of what they think should be done. They come to designers, yes, and they allow us to be designers. But then there's always some companies that still don't have that trust that this design process is going to get us there. Now remember, design is very uncomfortable. Design kind of questions the basic belief systems that you already have.
Mm.
So if you know things usually happen like this, and you have been in that career world for, I don't know, 20 years, 30 years.
Yeah.
And then you have this young guy, and most of the designers are very young. So you have this young guy coming in wearing shorts or sneakers, and then sticky notes, colorful things. And you are trying to tell us that this playful thing that you are doing is going to give us solutions to a problem in Mandera. That's not really possible. So just, first of all, making sure that you onboard clients into the process and they believe that this process is going to get there is the biggest challenge for designers. And especially when you meet people who don't necessarily believe in the system of design or have experience bias. They've been in that industry for 1,000 years. It's the way they're doing things.
Yeah.
They're trying to destabilize how they believe. And then you're this playful, happy kind of guy who tries to make people dance, listen to music while they're doing. So it's, design is like a little bit fancy in a way for some people. Some people, it's too fancy. You get that? So it becomes a difficult thing. Third is the organizations try to control the outcome. So yes, you've decided to be a facilitator. This is what research is actually saying. But because it questions the very basic foundation of why they are doing what they are doing, they will try to tweak you towards where they want to go. And this happens a lot in the for CEOs, let's say, guys who are in charge of companies, or in the social impact space for NGOs that have an intention of doing something to communities, which is their, I'll call it the vision or something of that sort, and you're coming to question how they're actually doing. So those moments are there, and they're the most difficult moments for designers. How do you balance between delivering what is versus delivering what they actually want to deliver?
Mm.
So I see those as interesting challenges. And then, of course, learning. There's a lot of information online.
Yeah,
I think most designers I have met are like, okay, so where do I start from?
Yeah.
I know I can easily contextualize and say this is how I did it.
Yeah.
But where do you really start from?
Yeah, it's
I think there's need for guidance in actually doing that.
I like what you said about there's also need for guidance, because you know, even then when you're in Egerton or when you're starting off, when you're doing the magazine, definitely you wouldn't have imagined you'll be here at this time. So it's always been a process, and it still is a process. So maybe years to come, we'll be talking of different story, but it's building up to something else. So maybe you've mentioned a couple of places. Yeah. Maybe you can advise someone who's looking to get into this space. Maybe would you link us to blogs, to people to follow, maybe organizations? Of course, we have the IDI. Maybe what books? Yeah, just to guide us.
So first of all, what I usually tell people is that it's important to understand some basics of psychology.
Yeah.
If you're getting into design. Mm-hmm. If you look at most of the books in the design space have an element of psychology. Mm-hmm. Because majority of the work in design is understanding and listening.
Yeah.
You can only do that by understanding basics of how the mind works. So any book that has basics in psychology, the best. For me, the foundational book, which is really weird. It's not really a design book, but it is a design book. It's The Alchemist.
Oh, okay.
I think The Alchemist was the foundation book for me. It changed completely how I process, how I think about things and stuff like that. And that is what really helps me in the process of design. So learning psychology basics is important. Mm-hmm. And then secondly, I think one of the most, for me personally, the most useful platform has been the Interaction Design Foundation. So the Interaction Design Foundation mm-hmm. is it's like an online academy. It's like a community of designers. It has over 100,000 designers right now, 200,000. But it's, you do a membership fee, and then you get a collective of all the different kinds of design that you actually want, courses and stuff like that. And I usually say that is the best place because it is organized and it will give you kind of a process of doing things. A lot of people do the Acumen course by IDEO. So IDEO, I think, is the foundation of knowledge in design. They have a lot of content.
Yeah.
They have a designer's kit. They have publications they've done. They have blogs. IDEO is just out there with content. And then following up what other organizations are doing right now, there's I'm part of a designers collective called the Proportional Global Design Community. So it's a collective of designers in the Global South. Proportion Global is about 80 designers from the Global South. It's a Dutch company, but now most of the designers are in the Global South. We share knowledge, content. It's one of the best places to get in and learn and just get a mentor to hold your hand and stuff like that. There's another collective called Grid Impact, but Grid Impact has not really built necessarily a community, but they have content that they've actually published.
Yeah.
I also think ADP List should be the first place to go.
Yeah.
ADP is actually amazing designers people list. So it's an interesting thing that came up during the COVID pandemic, but it's like a mentorship hub for design. And then in Kenya, I think most importantly, just make sure you follow all the main companies. There's ThinkPlace, which does amazing work in the social impact space. There's IDEO, of course, IDEO.org. IDEO.org is more loud in the social impact space. There's Dahlberg that does a lot of work in design also.
Yeah.
There's Busara Institute, I think, that does a lot of things in behavioral design and stuff like that. For behavioral design, I did my studies at Irrational Labs, which is an interesting, again, space of, I just love how they deliver their content and how they structure the whole framework of design. Behavioral design, that it's not complicated. It's very easy for you to just follow and stuff like that. So yes, content is a lot, but most important thing, I think for me, every year I have been adding a new element of design in my work, from UX design to service design to conversational AI design to behavioral design.
Yeah.
Every year I try to add a new element to the work that I actually do. And it's just complementary at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And then as a designer, you just have to learn every single day something new.
You have to be humble enough to learn.
Get someone to just guide you.
Yeah, I love what you said. I think what has really come out clear is the difference between the design that you're doing and the other design is the designers are creating yours. This other design is to facilitate, not to create solutions. And I think it's the most humbling experience ever. because all of us have opinions and all of us have biases. It's very humbling to listen to other people and to allow them to be the one to, yeah. And now, because you mentioned, from what I'm hearing, you've done a lot of work in Kenya. Have you done work in maybe like the East African region, Uganda, Tanzania?
Yeah, Uganda, Kitambo, did some work there around, but that one was in agriculture.
Yeah.
Some work in Ethiopia before, but that was actually remote. Again, in agriculture design.
Yeah.
And research. Malawi, way before, again, design, in my early stages of design, there's a work, yeah. Some work we did through Egerton University. I wouldn't say it was really design.
Yeah.
Because by that time I was not really into design. So what we were doing is to come up with research and then come up with ideas and innovations within the agriculture space. So we did a lot of work outside Kenya with Egerton University. We still do. Currently we are doing something with USAID. Still in Kenya, but then a lot of work is actually done by Michigan State University, which is a leading organization. And then there's some work and support systems we're giving to Nigeria in business development and mentorship and stuff like that.
Yeah.
There are quite a few out of Kenya, but there's a lot of, I would say the space is quite open.
Yeah.
I don't know why I don't know any designer from Tanzania.
Yeah.
So what happened is after 2020, after COVID, what happened is we started working with a lot of designers within different countries. Yeah. Instead of even traveling all the way, then if someone can actually contextually understand better research, then yeah. It's better for them to do, and then collectively remote work. So since after COVID, I think travel has actually been going down. So you do work remotely and stuff. So again, you still have to learn skills to do remote work.
Yeah.
It's not easy. It's not easy to facilitate a design workshop remotely. Oh, God.
How are you? Because, you know, it's very practical. How do you do that? It's so hard.
It is. But things like Mural and Miro, this whiteboarding,
the whiteboards
have really helped.
Yeah.
Yes, but you still have to. You have to spend like 30 minutes first of all training and onboarding people.
Yeah.
But the experience is very different. So again, we are trying to design around that as we go.
Yeah, better experiences, but, and I feel like design, this is the way to go. We won't run away from online from now henceforth. Like ever since COVID, I think this is the new normal, almost. So we. I really love what you're doing. So you mentioned you're a poet. Just, do you still do poetry? Amma, that's something you put on hold.
No, I still write. I think the last time I performed poetry was about 6 years ago. It's a long story. It's a long story of heartbreaks and love and being biased.
To that write. Poet.
But I love poetry because so my anchor in poetry is usually the story of the African woman. There's something beautiful about the African woman that even she does not understand. So I'm currently writing a book called In the Midst of Thought. In the Midst of Thought is it's a collection of poetry and art and portrait photography. I was a photographer.
Oh, okay.
At some point, I know I'll go back to it once I stop this. Running around this world. So it's a collection of portraits, drawings, and illustrations, and poetry about the African woman. Borrowing a lot from what my mother has done and shown me. And then also the women around me in Africa just amaze me every day by how they process in life. Women are strong.
Yeah, I know, right? Power to the women. So you're saying you're working on a book. Is there any way people can get your poetry works?
I think I have I'll share with you a link.
Yeah, okay. So
I have some work I've been publishing online. Wasting time.
At you wasting time.
But poetry is like poetry is like therapy.
Oh yeah.
So I find myself so it's weird because I think I write when I'm in noisy places, like in my club.
Yeah.
I don't know how to work in so much silence.
So
as long as there's noise, I'm super creative.
Okay, that's weird. It actually looks normal, but how do you even concentrate? But that's okay. Everyone has different processes
as
well.
It's because I think one thing I came to learn, so I don't know how to read a book. I can't read a book completely and finish.
Mm-hmm.
I use audiobooks a lot.
Yeah.
But then the reason why is because I realized that I try to read a book in silence. So my mind is always moving all over the place.
It's true.
So for me to be able to focus, I need to give myself another distraction. So I'm either listening to music,
content
while reading,
the noise. Yeah.
Or there's something else something else going on where I can actually focus on the other.
Makes sense.
Thank God I discovered that.
Yeah, for me, I've always noticed I can also work with a lot of noise as long as I can concentrate, because there's also a lot of noise in my head. But it's always like a balance. There are times I work well in silence, so I'm yet to discover my preferred. But definitely my favorite is always audio. I learn better with audio. That's why I'm even doing a podcast, and I do it for myself. So it's always that hobby of mine. I'm recording for myself, and then I post for other people who want to hear.
Do you consider yourself lazy?
Me? Lazy? Sometimes, yes. I don't know. I just don't like stressing myself out, maybe.
So you look for the shortest cut.
Yeah, as long as I get the job done, I'm always like, okay, yeah. I don't want to stress myself out. And also just realizing that I'm very different from people. Because, you know, sometimes I've always wondered why some people, because for me, I don't work at night at all. Like, it's one of those things. But when you find me at 3 a.m., I'm always awake. So I've tried to sleep like other creatives who cash at night. Me, I won't cash. I'll just sleep. So I was like, okay, let me just understand myself, and I wake up earlier. So it's always that understanding, you're like, you're not like other people, and it's okay for people to be different. So you can work differently, but as long as you get the job done.
Yes. That is the basic foundation of being a good designer.
Yeah.
Self-aware.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So now, since designer somehow.
Yeah, I am a designer, child-centered. So now, since we've talked about a lot of things, is there any parting shot you can have for someone who's listening? Just any piece of advice. This is random, doesn't have to be from design. Words of wisdom, any line from any of your poems, I don't know, just anything you want to tell people.
That's the only thing I have never known how to say. But I think for me, I'm driven a lot by the fact that it's easy for people to do things differently and change their lives. When I was growing up, there used to be a sewer line that had burst in our area, and the sewage was actually passing over the road.
Yeah.
And there was a carpenter next to it. And this guy, with all his waste, wood and stuff like that, never thought of even putting some of the wood on top of that sewer.
Yeah.
To just cover it, like you don't need to even repair. And it's because for him, I think he always thought, just now processing it as an adult, I think it was around for like 5-6 years. So for him, he always thought it's not his responsibility to do it. It was Kanjo's work. It's the city council or the county council that has to do that. And that is the same thing that happens in our day-to-day life. There are things that are very simple for us to do within our own livelihoods just to make ourselves happy. But because we feel like it's someone else's responsibility, we don't take up that responsibility and do it.
Yeah.
And I feel like design is a designer's mindset is going to help us as a country, as a continent, to first of all make sure that we are not taken advantage of like we have been in the last 100 years. And then second, we have the confidence to tell our own story. Africa does not tell its own stories. We need to tell our own stories. And the only way we can tell our own stories is by creating a belief system around the things that we are doing, count the small wins that we actually have, and be able to talk about them. Yeah, we will do a project with someone from Europe, and after every 10 minutes, they'll have a post on LinkedIn saying, this is what we have done. We have changed the world. But if you ask Munyala, so what is the impact of your work?
Munyala
is like, wait a minute. Have I really done anything in the last 7 years?
Yeah.
We need to be able to be loud enough to talk about it and to take responsibility of things, just knowing that the little actions we take can actually change our own lives.
Mm.
I think that's what I would leave people with.
Yeah, that's a bit of being loud. I hear you. Because you always like downplaying. You know, someone has done something really small, you're like, and they're so loud about it. But now you're just downplaying stuff. Yeah, so that's really good advice. I really like to appreciate you for taking time to do this interview. There's a lot of information here. I'm just going to go listen to it for myself first, and then see if I'm going to share, and then share as well. But I feel like there's a lot we can even talk and even discuss, even consult. I'm like, no, I know someone to always ask, because I'm always interested in the children's aspect. But I know someone else who's listening to this would be really inspired. You can create an impact with the little things you have, just always being an active participant of your life, not be the one to wait for other people to make changes in your life. Looking forward to see your book. When is it going to be out?
I am very lazy. Right now, my head is focused on space.
Okay.
My head is focused on space because we have like 3 months to full launch.
Okay.
But then slowly by slowly, I'll start making noise about it. When you see me start making noise about it,
yeah,
you know it's important. It's coming up soon.
That's okay.
And
that's okay.
Just one thing that you've mentioned. One thing you've mentioned, I think it's important for people to know that the designers in the design space, sometimes we romanticize design, Sana. We make it look like it's an exclusive skill and talent and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it's not. It's very simple to just get into it and start learning as you're doing. So sharing is the most important thing. So this good work you're actually doing.
Yeah, thank you so much. Looking forward to see all the other projects you're working and also just learning a lot from the IDI. And yeah. I know we'll go forward.